Welcome to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm Graham Richmond, and this is your wiretaps for Monday, July 24th, 2023. I'm joined by Alex Brown from Cornwall, England. Alex, how are things going?
Very good. Thank you, Graham.
So listen, before we get started, I want to give a special shout out to everyone who sent us audio clips for last week's 300th episode of the podcast. And I need to explain why we didn't acknowledge them on the show itself where those audio clips aired. And it's because we recorded, as you know, like before we had any audio clips. And I was really afraid that maybe no one would send us any audio clips. So I couldn't refer to them because I literally didn't know who was going to send them in. So I did want to really sincerely thank everyone who did that. I know it's kind of a pain in the butt to do. And so from the bottom of my heart, like sincere thank you to everyone who sent us those well wishes, you know, for the episode. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant. And a couple of familiar names, well, not names, I don't think we knew their names, but could kind of tell a couple of folks who they were. Absolutely brilliant. Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of fun. So what's the news though, Alex, otherwise? I mean, what's been going on in the MBA admissions world, on the website, et cetera?
Yeah, so a couple of LiveWire entries this last week. Folks coming off the Wharton waitlist, so the summer waitlist for Wharton, which is quite interesting because we've talked about this before. If Wharton is making a move at this time of year, those folks that are coming off the waitlist probably have spots in other programs. So if they choose to go to Wharton, spots might open up in programs a tier below and so on and so forth. So we'll see what the consequence of that is. But yeah, always, you know, it's if you're still on a wait list, there is still an opportunity or a shot that you might come off until the classes start or the preterm starts and they get the numbers on the ground.
Right.
So be aware of that. The other big news, obviously, Graham, is the launch of our new website, which we sort of talked about a little bit in last week's podcast, because I think, again, when we were recording, it was the day we launched it.
Yeah, we were afraid to say too much.
Yeah. Who knows what was going to happen, right, when you do something like that. But the big piece of that, I mean, I've been really impressed over the last week in terms of how it's functioned. One of our goals was to make the site quicker, i.e. more accessible, because we knew that was a pain point. So I've been impressed over the last week that has happened. Let's fingers crossed that does happen as the season really progresses. But the bigger news, I think, is that we've taken our subscription service, Clear Admit Plus, and we now make that available to everyone who registers on the site for free.
Yeah.
Which I think is really, I hope folks realize how much additional resource that is, because if you register, obviously you can, you know, add comments, likes, you can do lots of different things on the site already. And one thing that we try to do is really build a very supportive community through that process. But last year, we recorded the Admissions Academy, Graham.
Yeah.
So I forget, maybe 25 plus videos.
Yeah.
Where we go through in detail the admissions process from soup to nuts, from start to finish. And I think it's, I obviously I'm a bit biased, but I think it's a pretty fantastic series.
Yeah.
That's now freely available to all registered users, as is the data dashboard. So you can do queries based off of GMAT score, GRE, various other things on the data dashboard. The book has been free, remains freely available. And again, I'm biased there, but I think the book only takes one night to read.
Yeah.
And I think it really does give you a really good grounding of what to do over the next several months. And there are other resources too in Clear Admit Plus. So what we're trying to do now is think of every person that registers on the site. They're all Clear Admit Plus members.
Yeah.
And you know, at the end of the day, we're hoping that level of sort of access and resource is well received in the community.
Yeah, and I mean, that's really what drives us at Clear Admit. Like, I love the fact that we've made these things freely available now. I just think that that's kind of our mission as a company anyway, is to sort of help people as they navigate this process. And, you know, because we are wildly biased in favor of management education. Like, we love the MBA degree. We think it's a force for good in the world if people are, you know, studying best practices in management. So yeah, that's great. I mean, I'm sure people know this, but most of the revenue that Clear Admit generates comes from schools and our partners anyway. And so the revenue that we generate from the applicant pool is, you know, quite small. And so we just figured, let's just make everything free for everyone. I just think it's the way to go. And yeah, I'm hoping people watch the videos. I mean, there are probably admissions consultants out there not so happy that we've kind of made all this stuff free, but I think it's great. There's a lot in there that you can learn and you know, save some money along the way too. So that's what we're here for.
And admissions consultants have a really important role to play for those that really want that sort of hands-on guidance,
sure, absolutely,
and feedback and so on and so forth. But those that are a little bit more self-directed and feel that they can navigate this themselves, which is, you know, I'm not saying that's a majority of MBA candidates, but it's got to be a big portion.
Yeah.
Resources like the Admissions Academy is a no-brainer for that group.
Yeah, totally. So, so if you're, you know, listening and you're registered on our site, go back to the site and click on that Clear Admit Plus button that appears when you're logged in, and you can gain access to all of these features. Yeah, so that's been a lot of fun to get underway in the last week or so. The other thing that's been happening, Alex, is, you know, we continue to host our Essay Insight series where we sit down with admissions directors from top schools. I had a lot of fun earlier this week. We're recording, you know, last week here, but I had a lot of fun sitting down with admissions directors from Wharton, Chicago, Dartmouth, and Darden. I think we had hundreds and hundreds of people join that webinar. Well, we're going to do it all again this week. And our guests this week are Columbia Business School, Carnegie Mellon Tepper, Michigan Ross, UNC Keenan Flagler, and the Yale School of Management. So I'm going to sit down with those five schools this Wednesday at noon Eastern. Hope everyone comes out. We've had such great turnout for these events so far in the series. And then we have one more next week, again, next Wednesday at noon Eastern. I'm going to sit down with reps from Cornell, UCLA, Washington Foster, INSEAD, and London Business School. And you can register for these events by just going to bit.ly/CAMBA essay, all lowercase, all one word. So yeah, these have been a lot of fun, Alex.
Graham, you're being a bit vague there. How many folks, plus or minus 10 or 20, how many folks attended your most recent Essay Insights event?
I probably need to pull up Slack and look, but it was over 700. Wasn't it like 750 people came to the event? Something like that.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it was quite that high, but the number was like gobsmacking.
Yeah, it was really.
I mean, the point is, yeah. I mean, obviously online events are a relatively new forum for MBA admissions. Certainly the COVID pandemic really accelerated them.
Yes.
But to run an online event that has, whether it's 500 or 600 live attendees, I'm not talking about registrants, because registrants was in the four figures, but 600 live attendees is incredible. Obviously, we can't put it all down to Clear Admit, although our team does a fantastic job recruiting folks to join. But, you know, we obviously have the adcom from these top programs, and they're revealing really interesting insights into their MBA essays.
Yeah.
You're asking great questions and sort of pushing and prodding a little bit. But yeah, I think I'm nothing to do with this series, so I'm able to say nice things about it without being totally biased, because, you know, it doesn't make me look any better, because, like I say, I've had nothing to do with that. I'm absolutely floored by the amount of attendees we're able to draw for these events.
And I just looked it up. We had 731 individuals join us. Yes, it was yesterday. Yeah. So
that's a record for Clear Admit.
I think so. Yeah. No, lots of fun. And I really do. I love getting into the weeds with the admissions reps. And we had such a great group last week, and I'm sure this week's going to be the same. I mean, just really interesting to talk about the essays and, ask them the questions that I think candidates really want answers to. So, in any event, the other stuff I wanted to mention briefly before we get into this week's candidates that we're profiling is we ran a couple of admissions tips on the website. One is about how to make your resume for business school. And now you can read that tip and then download for free our resume guide, because that's part of Clear Admit Plus, as you make your resume. We also have a special admissions tip on applying to business school as a younger applicant, which I think might be relevant for one of the candidates we're going to profile later in the show. And then we connected with two admissions directors for admissions director Q&As, as that's just a part of a series that we're running right now. So the first one we connected with was Sherry Hubert from Duke's Fuqua School, and she had a couple of things to say that I wanted to share. I mean, I strongly recommend people go to the website and read these articles because there's a ton in there. But one thing that that Sherry talked about was she said, this year we're including an optional section that allows applicants to share more regarding their upbringing and family circumstances that may help us better understand their lived experience, especially for those who may have been the first in their family to attend college or may have experienced financial hardship growing up. So I thought that was interesting just in light of what we've been talking about the last couple of weeks with Supreme Court decision, affirmative action. And so I think there, as we've said, like the MBA admissions process is so holistic that there are many ways for schools to learn about your background and any hardships you've faced, et cetera. So she called attention to that, I think probably with good reason, but yeah.
Is this a new essay, Graham?
I think that, yeah, it sounds like it's a special thing that they've added this year as an optional section.
And quite likely as a direct result of the Supreme Court's decision.
Exactly. Yeah. And then
this is what schools have got to do.
Yeah. Absolutely.
They've got to tease out a candidate's journey to where they are today.
Yeah, and then
and if they can do that effectively, then that I think that's absolutely ideal.
Yeah. And then the other thing that she mentioned is she just was talking about, you know, kind of do's and don'ts. And she said, common mistakes that I've seen applicants make unintentionally are not explaining aspects of their application that may be viewed as outside of the middle 80% range, especially on the lower end. So if there's something in their profile that they feel is not a strength, I would urge them to tell us what they've done to shore up that area. By being proactive, applicants can demonstrate self-awareness and humility along with a drive to improve. So this is something that we like preach constantly on this show, right? This idea that like own something that's a weakness in your file and take steps to address it and let the committee know. So I think that's good advice, right?
Yeah, I think Sherry Hubert listens to the podcast.
She's an HBS grad and has been at a couple of different great business schools over the years, so she's a veteran. But yeah, I think
such a veteran. Even I know her.
Yeah. And then we also talked with Rebecca Lewin, who's the admissions director at Rochester's Simon School of Business, and I just wanted to share from her. We always ask them, are there any interesting classes that are on offer that are popular at your program? And she said they have this course that's called Advanced Marketing Strategy, and it's a semester-long simulation that extends concepts related to strategic marketing decisions about R&D, production, pricing, product, advertising, and channels. Students learn frameworks related to negotiations, crisis management, while deeply exploring their individual strengths and weaknesses as they learn to work effectively within a team environment. So they literally are thrown into this semester-long simulation, which sounds like a lot of fun. I feel like I did something like that at Wharton way back when, but it's all a bit of a memory now. So that sounds cool. Somebody to do it at Rochester.
No, very good. Yeah.
The last thing I wanted to say is, people, please continue to rate and review the show. It's the best way for new listeners to hear about us. So if you haven't yet given us a rating or written a review, please do so. You can write reviews on Apple Podcasts, or you can rate us on Spotify or anywhere else that you're listening. Really appreciate that. You can also reach out to us by writing to info@clearadmit.com. Use the subject line wiretaps. Alex, that's all I've got before we get into our candidates this week. Are you ready to roll?
Let's kick on.
All right. So this is Wiretaps candidate number one. Our first candidate this week comes from an ApplyWire entry, and this person is looking to start in the fall of 24. So they're going to be applying this summer and fall. They are looking at Berkeley, Duke, Michigan, Kellogg, UCLA, UNC, Darden, and Yale. And they've been working actually in what they describe as the recruiting slash talent acquisition space. So kind of an HR, and they would love to get into consulting after business school. They have a GPA of 3.3. And I believe they have yet to take the GMAT or GRE. They've been working for 10 years and they're located in San Francisco. And they have actually a very interesting set of work experiences in that they've been working for like the last 8 years in recruiting and talent acquisition. In fact, most of those years, 7 of them, they've been with the same company, and it's a FANG company. So they're currently a people manager. They run teams of 10 to 20 plus individuals. So they're fairly, sounds fairly high powered in terms of their role in HR and this consistency with many years at the same firm. Before that, though, they actually spent a couple years, 2 years, as a Teach for America Corps member teaching middle school mathematics. And they actually have a master's in education in math to go with their undergraduate degree, which I neglected to say comes from Berkeley and is in architecture. So they do plenty of outside activities, et cetera. But I wanted to just ask you, Alex, what do you make of this candidacy? Because they have, they're kind of a little bit older. They have maybe somewhat non-traditional experience between Teach for America and working in kind of a people, talent acquisition sort of role. I should also mention they say they're planning on applying in round 2 because they haven't taken the GMAT, and that they're going to apply for the Rhomba Fellowship, which is the Reaching Out MBA. So that's for LGBTQ plus folks, so far as I recall. So, yeah, what do you make of this candidacy?
Yeah, I mean, just from what this candidate's written, and I think you summarized it very well, this sort of candidate is probably very likable, right? They were doing an architecture degree. For whatever reasons, one thing they learned through doing that architecture degree was that architecture is not for them. Right. So they had to then they were involved whilst at Berkeley in extracurricular activities. They call heavily involved. They also worked throughout school, assuming that's sort of to bootstrap their academic experience. That can be very positive too. Their GPA is not ideal, 3.3. A little bit below average, but nevertheless, they obviously had a lot of other things going on. And the fact is, if they didn't, if it's not the degree that they really wanted, they came to that realization, maybe that takes a little bit of the motivation away from the academics, which is a little bit unfortunate. But anyway, so what did they do? They went for Teach for America. I think ADCOM tends to like that type of move.
Absolutely.
Concurrently, they did a Master in Education, Mathematics Instruction, which to me sort of signals, all right, they're doing Teach for America and they're really wanting to do it well. They're pivoting not only their career, but their academics a little bit there or whatever. So they do the Teach for America for a couple of years. Then they go work for a FANG company, which for those out of the big tech world is a big tech company, right? It means the same thing. And like you say, they've been in that position or one of those companies for about 7 years, looks like quite interesting and probably good leadership experience whilst concurrently still being involved in the community and so on and so forth. So they're going to be a little bit of an older candidate. So from that, they're going to need to show fit, that they'll fully engage both in the academics, the extracurriculars, and various other things at the schools that they're targeting, and so forth. They want to then go into consulting, basically to round out their business education. I think that's why lots of folks choose consulting. And then go into sort of leadership role in people management in the longer run, which makes perfect sense based off of what they've done pre-MBA. So, quite frankly, Graham, I like all that. They haven't taken the GMAT yet. If they can target, they say they're going to target around 700 plus, that would be very good. Obviously, the higher the GMAT, the better, sort of to mitigate the GPA a little bit. They talk about doing MBA math in addition. That would be great, but if they've already got sort of an MEd in maths, I'm sure there's quite a lot of math in that transcript, I assume. And if they do well on the quant side of the GMAT, then that further mitigates issues. But yeah, do MBA math, to sort of help transition to the MBA. I like their school selection, Graham. I don't think they're being overly aggressive. They've got a nice spread. They've got a M7 in there. They've got several top 16 programs. So from that perspective, I think maybe they want to add another M7 in there. Just to, you know, the M7 they have is Kellogg, which is great, but, you know, probably should add another in there, you know, just to sort of, anyway, you get what I'm saying. I'm not thinking straight, but yeah. I would add another M7 in there. I quite like this candidate overall, Graham.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, I think one thing I wanted to clarify is they said, I'm planning to take MBA math and potentially GMAC business fundamentals. They shouldn't take both of those. Those are comparable offerings in the marketplace. So pick whichever one's most convenient. I like GMAC business fundamentals. I'm biased because I had that interview with the woman who runs it and was impressed with what she had to say and how they designed it. But I think either way, it wouldn't hurt. I don't know, you know, master's in education with a focus on teaching math. Yeah, presumably there's a fair amount of math in there too. I don't know, you know, is it, you know, grade school math versus say algebra and geometry? I have no idea. So anyway, just be good to get ready for business school because again, this is an older candidate. And so I always love to see older candidates taking steps to kind of ready themselves for re-entry into the kind of student mode. So I think that would be smart. What do you think about, I mean, they're playing in round two. I guess I don't have a problem with that in that they're, you know, they're fairly unique, et cetera, and they haven't taken the test yet. I will say, like, if they could get the test out of the way this summer or even in September and take a flyer on a dream school or two in the first round, it wouldn't hurt them, and there might be more financial aid that comes their way. I just feel like sometimes these schools have more money to offer earlier in the process than they do later. But again, they're unique enough where they don't have to be in the first round in terms of their admissions chances. And I do agree with you. Aiming high, I would add another top school. I mean, I would, you know, they can look into which schools might be best suited when it comes to consulting or specifically HR related work. But yeah, there could be some other top programs. I mean, I don't know if they've looked at a Wharton or a Harvard or, you know, a Columbia or something.
Is Stanford out of reach, Graham?
I think, you know, no. I mean, I think this is a really interesting candidate that Stanford would love to get to know more about. I mean, I would say they're not out of reach. I mean, I think it'd be, the GPA is low.
Yeah, I mean, they're based in San Fran, right? So they probably got a West Coast bent, although I don't know that we absolutely know that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think, look at that first essay of Stanford's, and if they've got a compelling narrative for that essay, I think they should throw the hat in.
Yeah, it couldn't hurt. I mean, I obviously, if they get like a 650 on the GMAT to go with that 3-3, then I might say, gee, you know, the numbers aren't adding up to these very top schools. But if they can, you know, do well on the test and you know, take a business fundamentals or whatever to sort of, you know, bolster everything, they should be okay.
Yeah. Leave enough time to have to retake the test if necessary.
Yeah, good point. All right. I want to thank this person for sharing their profile. Really interesting background and happy to discuss it on the show here. Best of luck as they continue on this journey here. Let's move on, though, Alex, and talk about Wiretap's candidate number two. Our second candidate this week is also looking to start in the fall of 24. This person has been working in consulting, as they describe it, although they had a number of different jobs, which we'll get into in a moment. They're applying to Columbia, Duke, Harvard, Stanford, Chicago, Wharton, and UVA Darden. They really would like to transition into investment banking, VC, or private equity. They didn't specify, and they listed a whole host of companies in those domains, you know, from Bank of America, JP Morgan, Blackstone, Bain Capital. I will not read the whole list. There's a number of companies here. Their GRE score is a 335. I don't know that I've ever seen a score that high, so that's really high. But their GPA is a 3.0, and so that's actually really on the low end of things. They have 5 years of work experience in total. They are living in London and working there currently. They'd love to land in the U.S. after business school. And they are from Nigeria originally. So, you know, they mentioned that they, I guess they... They have mixed experience ranging from banking, where they worked in like international trade, deals advisory, infrastructure guarantees, and then also consulting, where they're doing like a lot of financial modeling. So it sounds like the consulting work they're doing, both that they've done and that they're doing now, is very much involved in like M&A activity and helping assist probably transactions and things. So that's their current role. They mentioned that their GPA is low because, you know, it just, well, actually they don't say why, but they said they were in the top 70% of their class. So it was a fairly competitive program, and they do some volunteering work outside of the office. And, you know, they're trying to pick up some community volunteering as well, that I guess in their new setting, because they've recently moved to London for whatever work they're doing. So that's this candidate. What do you make of this? Because this is an interesting quandary with that mega GRE and then a fairly low GPA.
Yeah, the GPA is a little bit pedestrian, but it seems like you say, the lack of grade inflation or whatever. So they're in the top 70% of their class.
Yeah, fair point.
And obviously, but it looks like their work experience is actually pretty strong. It's all banking related, whether it's banking directly or consulting, finance related, I should say.
Yeah.
Consulting, doing financial modeling and so on and so forth. And they've navigated the, going from Nigeria to London. So I would assume that that path, which is quite well trodden, is well trodden by the sort of the more elite folks coming out of Nigeria. So they're in London. I imagine they're doing quite well. I think they're quite recent into London and so forth. Obviously the GRE really stands out. I mean, if they had a 325 or 320 GRE, I'd be a little bit more pedestrian about this candidate, thinking, well, they've probably done quite well at work, but, you know, there's several others that sort of fit this same profile, so they'll be up against that challenge.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, the GRE is really good. So that is going to help, I think. They're from Nigeria, so, you know, does that make them overrepresented? Quite possibly. Nigeria finance. So, you know, target round ones to the extent that they can. Obviously, they do have the test score, so there's no need to be waiting for round two. So really push for round one. The target schools that they have is quite aggressive, certainly relative to our previous candidate. They've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 M7 programs,
right,
versus one for our previous candidate, and then a couple of top 16 programs. Now, if they're not successful in round one, then when they come back, if they have to come back into round two, then yeah, it would mean looking at more top 16 programs, I think.
Yeah.
To circle the wagons. But certainly with that GRE score, I think top 16 programs will be somewhat accessible anyway. If they have to go into the top 20, absolutely accessible with a score like that. I'd like to see a bit more on the long-term goal, where they're going post-consulting, or whatever it is, post-banking, and just a bit more clarity with their goals, because they've got investment banking, venture capital, private equity. Investment banking is sort of on one side. VC and private equity, we know, is very difficult from an accessibility standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
So just a little bit more clarity on the goals. Lots of possibility. But round one, I think, is going to be important for this candidate.
Yeah, I agree. Because I think as a Nigerian, they're going to probably be viewed as a little overrepresented. Think that, I recognize that the GPA and the context of things may be okay, but it's still, you know, coming out as a 3.0, and that's low for these very top schools. And so they've done what they can in terms of like, what do we say when someone has a really low GPA? We say, go and hit the GMAT or the GRE out of the ballpark, like get an amazing score to show that, you know, actually I'm super smart. I just had a really challenging undergrad or whatever it might be. So they, you know, they've done that. I think they need to apply in the first round. And I think they should probably, you know, read the book we wrote or download the recommendations guide that we have, make sure the recommenders are very much on the right page in terms of what they need to do. There's just, it's always a learning curve in terms of this process. I will say, I give them points for making that transition over to London, like you said. Sure, there are a lot of Nigerians who do that, but I think, you know, like you said, it's not only just elite. I think it's also challenging, you know, to leave your home country and set up shop in a new environment, and that shows grit and, you know, kind of an openness to new experiences that I think plays well with going off to business school. And so, yeah, I think they could be in good shape. I would apply, as you say, in the first round. I did have a note when I was looking at their ApplyWire entry. I had a note that I made here that, you know, was kind of wondering, are they being too aggressive and should there be another, you know, top 16 or top 20 school on the list too? But I suppose they could, like you were saying, you know, just go hard on the first round and go for it. And then if they need to reconfigure for round two, they could always drop an application or two in the second round to some schools that are slightly lower ranked if things haven't turned out well for them in the first round.
If you pick one other top 16 program for them, if they wanted to throw it into the first round, what would it be?
Well, so yeah, one that I was thinking about, and this somewhat depends on what they want to do. Like I would think that going to investment banking is the easiest path in terms of like, we know VC and private equity are very hard to get into. And so if they were saying, I'm going to do, you know, banking after business school, Cornell comes to mind as a great pipeline, right?
Cornell or Stern.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, those are two that come to mind immediately. You know, if they have to reach further afield than that, yeah, then it's a little more challenging. We'd have to think about that more. But I think those are two that I would certainly look at for sure.
Yeah.
So
yeah, very good.
Yeah. All right. So I want to thank that person for sharing. Hopefully, they're tuning into this episode and getting the advice that we're sharing. I know you've been leaving notes in these posts when we profile people. Although with the new website, I guess there was a little bit of a hiccup there. So hopefully, we're getting that sorted out.
Sorted.
Yeah. All right. So let's move on and talk about Wiretap's candidate number three. So our final candidate this week, again, comes from an ApplyWire entry, and they are also wanting to go to school in the fall of 24, although, spoiler alert, we may tell them not to do that. They've got Arizona State, Berkeley, Indiana, London Business School, Stanford, Rotman, UCLA, and UT Austin on their target list. So a really diverse set of schools. This candidate has been working in what they describe as law foreclosure for the last year. They just have that 1 year of work experience so far, and they're either thinking about consulting after business school or maybe a media job. So they have, you know, Bain, Deloitte, McKinsey, PwC, but also Fox, Time Warner, Walt Disney, etc. on the list. So they have a very high 3.78 GPA from undergrad. As I mentioned, they've just been working for 1 year, originally from Brooklyn, I don't know if they're originally from there, but they're currently located in Brooklyn, and they would love to end up on the West Coast or in the Southwest of the United States after business school. The Southwest, I'm wondering about those temperatures they've been experiencing of late. Maybe it's less of a desirable destination these days, but I don't know if you've been reading about that, Alex. But but in any event, they mentioned that they feel strong academically, but that they, you know, very recently graduated with a triple major in cultural anthropology, English creative writing, and African and Puerto Rican studies. So very kind of interesting kind of undergraduate background, although not terribly quantitative. They were president of, a Sigma Tau Delta chapter. They worked on a board for their college, for the college literature magazine. And they also had a job while they were in school to pay, kind of make some money and fund their education. They graduated magna cum laude, which is great. And then, you know, their issue, though, they mention is that as a social studies humanities student, they haven't touched math in years, and they're worried about this GMAT, which they haven't taken yet. So they're kind of, that's what's on their mind. And they're also like, I don't have quite 2 years of experience, or I won't when I start. And how would the programs evaluate that? Should I hold off on applying? So what do you say to that, Alex?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, let's look at this candidate in detail. They had a really strong undergraduate, right? So academically very smart, really interesting. I mean, it just sounds like they'd be really interesting to talk to about what they've done and so on and so forth. So a huge check mark on their academics. And so well done for that. But as we know, you know, top tier MBA programs are looking for more than that, right? That's sort of table stakes. And you know, obviously they need to complement that with a high test score, but this whole professional experience side of it is going to be much weaker for this candidate for two reasons. One is it's 1 year of experience at this point. It might be two on matriculation or whatever. But secondly, what are they doing? It's law foreclosure, and they only decided to do that because of their own circumstances growing up, and so on and so forth. They talk about that a little bit on the apply wire entry. So they weren't doing it to necessarily progress in that field and so forth, but more as an intellectual exercise to learn about that industry. So there's two things that I would suggest this candidate does. One is go get another job that really sets them on that pathway toward then becoming much more, making top tier programs much more accessible to them. So that potentially would be a consulting pathway. And then secondly, take this law foreclosure interest that they've had and turn it into an outside of work passion activity. Whether it's sort of creating, I don't know, foreclosure literacy for folks that are struggling with these issues, whatever it might be. But that, I think, would be really interesting to do that as more of a passion project. Do a couple of 3 years of consulting. Do get a really strong test score. And then all of a sudden, you've got a candidate who's going, you know, going to be M7 accessible, right? Accessible to top MBA programs. As of now, if they go take the GMAT, let's say they get a 680 or a 700, slightly weaker on the math side or whatever, maybe they'll do MBA Math 2. They apply this season. Maybe top 30 programs are going to look at them, right?
Yeah.
You know, because they've strong academically and they're thinking of their potential rather than what they've actually done in their career and so forth. So top 30 programs, potentially maybe top 20, depending on what the season looks like next season.
Mm-hmm.
But in 3 years' time, they apply, they do all the right things. It's going to be top 16, M7, the top programs. So that's the conundrum here, Graham.
Yeah, and I think it maybe not even 3 years. Like, I think if they could pivot into a consulting role or some, you know, new role that's more aligned with their career plans and things, it could be that, you know, if they do that quickly and then a year goes by, they could apply and say, look, I've got a year in this role. I'm going to have two by the time I matriculate. And, yeah, you know, if everything, yeah, else lines up, if they can do well on the test. I will say that when it comes to making that pivot, I know there was some discussion on the Apply Wire post. You were going back and forth with this candidate, right, about some of this stuff. And I wondered whether the best way to make a career pivot, so this person's only 1 year out from undergrad and is saying, oh, I might want to go work either in entertainment, like at a Disney or in a, I guess he or she mentioned electronic arts or something, but also consulting, right? And so, like, how do you do that if you're just 1 year out into the workforce? And I would say, rather than applying cold, like via LinkedIn or going to the company's websites, I would go to the career services office at their undergraduate institution or have a conversation with the person who runs career services if it's not local to them. And just, yeah, find out what's available, because there might be better ways to kind of get an in with a company or find a way into the kind of recruiting path than just doing it cold. So that's just a thought I had as we were thinking about that part of it.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think that's a really important point. I mean, the key is, how to make that next step in their career pre-MBA,
right,
for the next couple of years. Try to get into an analyst program at a consulting firm or something like that. And you know, get their head down, as well as then pursue this non-profit interest or whatever in law foreclosure.
Yeah.
That would be the ticket. But yeah, how do they do that? I'm not an expert in that, but I think your point of them going back to their undergraduate and leaning on on them a little bit is probably a very smart thing to do.
Yeah, and it might be that some of the consulting firms are a tough sell given their lack of a quantitative background, and so they may end up having to do something a little bit different, like in marketing. Or, but I mean, you know, I would just start with their career office at undergrad, yeah, if that's available to them. It really interesting candidacy. I will say, this person resonates with me a little bit too, because I had no math background myself when I applied to business school, and had a very kind of, you know, humanities undergraduate degree. And I will say, like, I made the mistake of applying a little bit young and without a good test score, and I was basically sent back to go do some work on that stuff. So I would say, if this person's tuning in, like, be smart for them to, yeah, you know, maybe take some outside courses, really bolster up, get going on the GMAT prep, because that is going to be an area that schools look at when this comes time for this candidate to apply, and it wouldn't hurt for them to really be ready in that regard. So, yeah. But yeah, very interesting though. Super. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think schools will be interested in this candidate. I would just wait a bit.
Yeah,
for sure. Yeah. So, Alex, thanks for picking these out. Once again, we've managed to spend about 40 minutes talking about real candidacies and, you know, lots of changes on our website and everything. So it's been a lot of fun this week. We'll do it all over again next week. And I will see you then, Alex.
Brilliant. Best of luck, everyone. Stay safe.